Second.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Clay.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem O'Malley.
Yes.
Mayor Kelly.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
And now we'll have updates from the city manager, Mr. McKinney.
Mayor and council, thank you. Let me give you a couple of items. First of all, the Del Rio specific plan and EIR project. I want to update the city council on the Del Rio specific plan EIR process for the Walmart and Annex project. The original draft EIR for the Del Rio Road commercial area specific plan, as you recall, was circulated last year. The city decided it would be beneficial to analyze and provide additional information regarding a Walmart-only project alternative, which is currently being recirculated. The partially recirculated draft environmental impact report was released this year on March 15th for public comment, along with the proportional share analysis report. The mitigation measures for the Del Rio Road US 101 interchange have been changed from the previous draft EIR. The first draft EIR specified that the project applicant, that would be Walmart and the Rotman Group, would be responsible for building modern roundabouts where the two traffic signals currently exist at the bridge over the projects. A good example of this is the Lewis Avenue Bridge, right out our back door across Atascadero Creek. This bridge was built by the city using TIF funds that were paid from development projects. The latest version of the draft environmental impact report is recommending a different mitigation measure for the interchange. Under the different mitigation measure, the applicants would pay both a standard TIF, the regular one that we collect for everyone, plus a special TIF for the interchange, and the city would secure permits and project approvals from Caltrans as well as construct the interchange improvements. The special TIF would cover the project's proportionate share of the interchange cost, roughly $2,388,000. In addition, projects would pay the standard TIF of approximately $2,865,000. In total, after TIF credits are applied, the projects will contribute approximately $4,887,000 to the city's TIF account. The city would use this money to build the interchange improvements. The partially recirculated draft EIR is part of our CEQA process and is a public process. We encourage the public to submit their comments on this document up until the deadline, April 30th, 2012. After the public comment period is closed, written responses to the comments received will be prepared and the final EIR will be released. There will be public hearings on this Del Rio specific plan EIR before the Planning Commission and thereafter the City Council. Both last year's EIR document and the additional information which has been recirculated and the comments compose the final EIR, which will be considered at the public hearings. We expect the hearings to be held in June of this year. The city will be providing notice in advance of the dates for these public hearings. In addition, the city has a mailing list for anyone who wished to receive a notice of the hearing dates by mail. If any member of the public has questions regarding the Del Rio project or wishes to be added to the city's mailing list, they should contact the Community Development Director, Warren Frace, who may be reached at 805-470-3491. Secondly, a really great slide here, I think. The Dragon Palace, the Chinese restaurant opening at the former Players location, is moving forward again, and that we provided a week ago.
Thanks, Wade. We thought it would be a good idea to update you on activities since the press conference of last week and to share some of the details of that press conference with you and the community, since members of the community haven't had a chance to hear what the city's response is. So as an update, first of all, we did have that press conference on the 2nd, and all major media outlets covered the conference. If they were not there, we had follow-up conversations, and we believe the word was able to get out through the press that we were sharing that day. We have been in contact with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, since the conference and since the report was released, and they remain supportive of their decisions to grant the city assistance, and that's important. Remember, in the report, the Office of Inspector General is auditing the actions of the Federal Emergency Management Agency. They do this on all projects, and so this is the report they've issued, and they're looking at FEMA. And FEMA is still with us standing by their decisions, and so we will continue to support them as they prepare their response to the Office of Inspector General and provide them with any information we need. And so I just shared that with you. FEMA remains supportive, again, of their awards to the city, but I wanted to speak to liability. I think there's been some communication in the community. What is the liability to the city as a result of this? What's hanging out there? Again, because they remain supportive of our awards, they can take the report and say thank you. They can take the report and say, well, you raised a good point, city. Can you respond? Do you have some more information in this area? But they did grant those awards, and so because we believe they're standing by the grants of their awards, our liability is very limited, if any at all. There are many occasions where FEMA takes the report and says thank you and disagrees. Not saying that about us, but we believe the liability is limited. If for some reason FEMA changes its decisions as a result of the OIG report, then that could result in some reductions in funding to us, but we believe the project at this point can create enough cost savings as a result of the work we've been doing and the good work Bernard's has been doing. And remember, there was a list of several betterments, I'm calling the rotunda and some of the balusters and some of the nicer things you're looking to do to the building. It was several million dollars of work. And so between those two, we believe there's not a liability to the city's general fund, or the project would be able to contain any liability, if at all, we believe. And so as we have more information, we'll share that with you. But we wanted to update you on that. FEMA's response will take several weeks. This isn't something that we'll have an answer next week. There's a number of days they have to respond, and they are going to be looking over everything again and preparing that response. And we will work with them and keep the community informed as we work through this process. So again, we wanted to share with you some of the communication with not only FEMA, but other federal entities and the state as well. We're a subgrantee of the state of California. And so FEMA funds report through the California Office Emergency Management Agency, Cal-EMA, and then to us. We're a subgrantee of them. And so we've been in contact with all of those organizations throughout the entire process since 2003. And we've consistently received approval for the actions that we've been working through. And when making a determination, FEMA was aware of all the facts surrounding that determination, we believe. They asked a lot of questions, and we provided them with as much documentation as we could. We welcomed the Office of Inspector General audit. We knew this is part of receiving public assistance money. We fully cooperated. We made space available here at City Hall. We made access to as many documents as they requested and tried to make the process as transparent as possible. And we do have very detailed records, and so we were able to show them everything. Remember, Shell's been keeping these records, so they're very thorough and very accurate. The city's been forthcoming with all federal agencies since the reconstruction process began, and we believe we followed all state and federal laws. And again, we consistently checked with Cal-EMA and FEMA on each of these issues as we worked through this. And FEMA was aware of the facts contained in the OIG audit when making their determinations. There aren't a lot of surprises to FEMA that OIG pointed out. And so they were aware, and there's just some disagreement in how federal statutes and requirements are applied. So our overall response that you saw in the media was that we're surprised by the audit findings, and we strongly disagree with many of the findings and question the tone, characterizations, and conclusion of the report. Again, for background, we were alerted that an audit would occur in June of 2010, and the audit began shortly thereafter in August of 2010. The audit was completed in March and was released last week. As we said before, we were eligible for public assistance as a result of the San Simeon earthquake. It was a presidential disaster area, and that opens up the ability for public agencies to receive assistance for public facilities. That is something that the federal government allows. And some of the things we were able to receive funding for was the rehabilitation or reconstruction. At the time, it was questionable which way it would go, of the Prenery, which was used at the time for community activities, the repair of the historic City Hall, the provision of a temporary City Hall that we still are in, and other several small projects in the right-of-way. The audit made four findings, a very high-level quick description, that we did not accurately account or segregate costs for the architecture and engineering related to the project, that the temporary City Hall lease arrangement for this building and the building previous that we were in at Captain Kidd's was questioned, that funding for the Prenery building was improperly claimed, and that the city mistakenly charged $1,000. We employ strict strict accounting and fiscal controls. We carefully track all expenses and trace the source of all funds. Everything has been documented from time. Rochelle has boxes and boxes and boxes. We have a whole storeroom right behind the flags, actually, of all of this information. This is just a photo showing you how orderly our records are. You can see the file cabinets labeled City Hall. Everything is dated. All correspondence is tracked. You can see here we have year-end reports that we keep in binders for every year of the incident. The file on the right shows file cabinets and huge rolls of plans and paper and drawings. That we've been keeping all these things very accurately, and so we question that finding of our accuracy and our custody of records. We have also tracked all work that's consistent and non-consistent with FEMA regulations. And the non-approved FEMA work is that phase three work that you approved that the agency is taking on its own. These are building code improvements, the work on the dome, some of these niceties to the building that you're paying for separately out of redevelopment agency funds. That was part of your issuance of bonds, and those bonds were taken and those contracts let prior to the agency dissolution, so that work continues. And so we've kept all of that very separate. And as evidence, you can see here from the architect, these are bills for architecture coded to two different project numbers. You can see the dates are the same, August 10th, but the amounts are incredibly different and the project numbers are different. So the FEMA work and the city work are accounted for very different. Now, we still are in discussions with FEMA as for what that final number will be, because the architectural budget has been a moving target as the cost of the improvements change, as there are change orders. Some of these costs are percentages of construction. As Bernard's has made changes, we're still in discussions to what that final number will be, and perhaps that's why OIG was questioning the entire thing. We haven't received that clarification, but we have kept these separate invoices from the initial part of the project. The finding also says that we agree that $1.4 million should not be charged to the City Hall project. We've never said that. This is a statement in the OIG audit that I think just begs clarity. I don't know. Rochelle's never said that. A city official's never said that. And so we strongly disagree with that statement. We've never disclaimed any of these numbers. And again, it's just evidence in this report. We're not sure what facts at times they were looking at. Finding B, this has to do with the lease between the redevelopment agency and the city, the redevelopment for this building. The redevelopment agency was a separate legal entity at the time and was empowered to make independent transactions under California law. That was the rules of the road at that time. They questioned the players, namely the council being the redevelopment agency board, the city manager being the executive director, the clerk parlor, we all recall being there, as an urgency measure. That building was very small. It was 11,900 square feet approximately. We moved from a 60,000 square foot building, so we were very cramped. And those indeed were temporary quarters, and many of you remember being in that building. So, one, it was very small. It was going to be difficult to stay in that building. But two, that building was slated for demolition. The partners of this project always wanted to move forward with the theater, and so we knew that that would be a short-term lease. There was allegation that we should have stayed in that building the whole time, that it was smaller, it was more cost-effective. That was not a choice that we had. Related to this building and why we're in it, the redevelopment agency purchased this building for redevelopment purposes, independent of the city's need for space. There were strategic reasons to purchase this building. We knew it would be part of Colony Square and the center development. The agency purchasing this building allowed the agency to make improvements to Lewis Avenue Bridge and the Creek Bank and to stabilize the creek and to restore this building as a viable office building in downtown to be sold at some point to the private sector, likely. And so that was where the council bought this for those purposes. However, it turned out that when we needed a second temporary city hall, our selection was limited, and that's been questioned as well. We looked at all available options for commercial property at the time in 2005, and we looked at the lease costs and sizes of all potential commercial space for office space in the city. In 2005, if you recall, the economy was in a very different place. There were very few vacancies. As a matter of fact, here's evidence of the city's position. We actually generated maps. You can see the date, July 21st, 2004, of all facilities for rent. And this was what we looked at to see what the most cost-effective option was that we were facing. We further shared a listing of all space for rent. You can see here there was a total of only 19,000 square feet available in Atascadero at the time in 10 different locations. That would have been completely inefficient for all for us to lease 10 separate facilities for the operations of City Hall. As you can see, the monthly rent, if you go straight across, even at the top, was roughly a dollar a square foot, in some cases more. That's the rent we pay for this building. It was consistent with what the market was bearing. And so we disagree with the response that we didn't look at other options or we're leasing this for a rich amount. That just was not true. FEMA saw that, and they approved that. It was very reasonable. It provided for continuity of government and our temporary housing, which we still are in today. There is this depreciation method that's recommended by OIG. Remember, OIG is looking at this, in some cases, 9-10 years later. And when you look at something that far, and you weren't part of the decision-making process, you weren't working hand-in-hand on the calls, you're going to have a different perspective. And so they're looking back saying, well, there's this. And today, it is hard to find space for 16 cents a foot. And so that amount, the point of the federal law is to get you into a temporary facility while your public facilities are being restored. We're still in that situation. Using OIG's numbers, we wouldn't have been able to lease anything. And the law allows you to be held harmless as you look to rebuild your city hall in this case. So that's our response to finding B. Finding C, this has to do with the printery. And there's been a lot of question on this one. The printery at the time was owned, operated, and maintained by the city as of the date of the earthquake. There were other intentions and decisions to do other things, but at that moment in time, the federal law test, did you own it, did you operate it, did you maintain it? That's the test that the Federal Emergency Management Agency used. And in that situation, the answer to those questions is yes. Ownership is a key factor in determining FEMA. Even if you've agreed to transfer the building, even if you agreed to sell your house in a transaction, you've entered into a contract, you're selling it, escrow has not closed. If there's an earthquake, the buyer doesn't use their insurance policy for that damage. You own that building legally. Your homeowner's insurance will have to fix your house for it to proceed through sale. And this is a similar situation. The building was in active use, and this has been debated, but at the time for karate, aerobics, children's programs, weddings, and events. And that's been questioned. The city agrees that another building was being used for a community center as well, but the printery was functioning for community use, and we still had title to the building. We fully cooperated with FEMA in this determination. We showed them photos. We showed them our recreation brochures. We showed them flyers for use of the building. We had testimonials from people who were in the building that week with their kids for classes. And so that's the types of information that FEMA looked at in making its decision. Based on that, they independently granted the city funding. They used an alternate facility. They provided funding for an alternate facility. I don't want to get too much into the detail, but they applied a federal test. Was it cheaper to fix the printery, or was it cheaper to give us a check and say, use that for a new community center? That's more cost effective for the federal government. That's the determination they made. It's called the 50-50 rule. If you read the OIG audit, you would see about that. And so we asked the council at the time, FEMA's willing to do a replacement project because it is cheaper per the federal rules, and the council accepted that amount from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The final finding has to do with that we booked $1,312 incorrectly. We agree with that. We did book $1,312 incorrectly, and we promptly corrected that error. So our concluding comments, we believe the OIG report consistently misrepresented our position on what we agreed to or what we substantiated as facts. We believe some of the financial figures were misleading. The basis for applying federal statutes was, and they would say, look at these documents. This shows that direction isn't the case. They wouldn't want to see those documents. There were questions we'd say, you should be asking these questions. Have you thought about asking us this? Do you want to see this? They would say no. And that was something that we were concerned about. We want that out there. And so the agendas and motives, we question that because FEMA acted independently. And believe me, while we work with them well, they're hard. Their tests, their rules, their levels of oversight are very difficult. It's taken finance thousands and thousands of hours to work through to get the grants and the awards we've received. FEMA has read the audit, as I shared, and they're supportive of their awards still. And we talked about our liability. And so, again, we strongly disagree with the report. And so that's the information we shared with the media. It's important the community sees this. I can try and answer questions the best I can, or the city manager. Unfortunately, Rochelle is the project manager on this, and she's out of town this evening.
Thank you, Jim. That was a very thorough and informative report. Are there any questions? Yeah. Councilman Clay?
Jim, when you say you had contact with FEMA actually was here. They went through the buildings. Is that not right? They physically were here a number of times. It wasn't just email and the telephone and so on.
No, they've had teams from Washington and from the regional office in Oakland and in Pasadena here several times.
Right.
To physically inspect our documents and our facilities.
And they went through the buildings?
Yes, they did.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. That was a very good report. Now the next on the agenda is the community forum. The community forum is reserved for persons wanting to address the council on any manner not on this agenda and over which the council has jurisdiction. The speaking time is 3 minutes, and the light will be green for 2.5 minutes. It'll turn yellow for the last 30 seconds, and a tone will go off at the end of 3 minutes. So, Reverend Shively, would you like to lead us tonight?
Sure. Hi, Mayor, Council, and staff, and audience. My name is Pastor Steve Shively from Refuge Church on Portola Road, and I'd just like to open the community forum or this part of the meeting forward in prayer. So if any would like to join me, I welcome you to if you're here or even listening on the radio or at home on TV. So let's bow our heads. Lord God, we just praise you and thank you for your goodness to us. We thank you for this beautiful place that we live in. We thank you, God, for your provisions for us, Lord. I just pray that we wouldn't take those things for granted. Tonight, God, we want to pray for those that are in need, as there many are in our community, those that are hurting, lived a life without sin and died in our place on the cross and rose again from the grave, that whoever would call upon his name would be saved. I just thank you that you are a God that shows no partiality, that invites all to yourself. And I just pray that many would heed that call to salvation and life everlasting. And tonight, Lord, we want to thank you for our government. We just want to thank you that you are the one that formed government, that set it up so we would not have a land of chaos and anarchy, Lord. We know that we are all flawed people. At times we make mistakes, so we're asking for your wisdom. We're asking for your guidance. We just pray your hand would be upon our council, on our staff, on our police, our fire department, upon our schools, upon our community here. And bless this meeting tonight, God. Be honored in it. I just pray the tone of it would be respectful, Lord, of whoever's speaking to those that are listening, and that profitable things could come out of tonight. So again, I just want to thank you, God, for your goodness, for the blessings you've given to me and our city, and just ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.
First speaker, Mr. Broadwater.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is David Broadwater. I have brought a document that's going to appear up on the screen here, and I would like to have help from Mr. Lewis for scrolling through it since this thing is tricky. Regarding the FEMA OIG audit, I'd like to speak to you about something that did not make it into that audit because you were not successful as a city in acquiring $7.5 million additional dollars based upon a lie in which the city lied about the condition of the City Hall Foundation and attempted to steal $7.5 million as repairs rather than mitigation for the City Hall. The truth is that 6 months before the San Simeon earthquake, the foundation and tilting and structural damage was known, and the claims that this was earthquake damage were lies. If you can scroll down, there's a Tribune article from 6 months prior to the earthquake. You can see in the headline there, one side is 7 inches lower than, and cracks are visible, that line right there. Also, it shows in here a number of different problems, but the northeastern end of the City Hall sits 7 inches below its western entrance. Please scroll down. The people who were cited in this are currently employed by the city now. Jeff English, Brady Cherry, and also Marge Mackey was quoted in this. This is the second lie. It shows a schematic of the building showing zero and zero elevation on either side, that it was perfectly level before the building. We know, and we knew 6 months before this, that that was a lie. Please scroll down. Lie number three, this is what the schematic is on the next page of that 2009 thing, showing that the building is tilted, and it says it's labeled after the San Simeon earthquake. So that's enough of that. I also have in my possession an email from Mr. Bob Kelly, our current mayor, who was then sitting on the Planning Commission, and that he wrote to all members of the City Council and Mr. Wade McKinney, the city manager, saying, quote, the building had sunk prior to the earthquake, and he called that a, quote, disturbing issue, end quote. There needs to be discipline enacted against these people who work for this city, who tried to defraud federal taxpayers of $7.5 million. And if the City Council won't do it, then not only do they lack the integrity to be public servants,
thank you, Mr. Broadwater. Your time's up. Are there any other speakers? Mr. Brendler.
Good evening, Council. My name is Mike Brendler, a resident of Atascadero, former member of the Council.
Mr. Lewis, your presentation was interesting. I find it rather appalling that it was not actually given by the man who claims in the leadership role of the city, Mr. McKinney. And I'll speak to that issue a little later here as well. Watching last week's tornadoes devastate parts of Texas was a stark reminder to us all about the power of Mother Nature and the resilience of the American spirit. And it's also a reminder of the potential for some to engage in unscrupulous behavior in times of disaster. 4 years ago, when the news first started rumbling through our community suggesting potential fraud subsequent to the San Simeon earthquake, I began making inquiries about the legitimacy of those suggestions, and I did so in the capacity of being a city councilman. As the mayor, my inquiries were sometimes met with silence and sometimes outright deception, particularly on the part of the city manager. As I inquired through other avenues, it became painfully apparent to me that the suggestions of deception had merit. Last week, the Department of Homeland Security, Office of the Inspector General, released the results of the FEMA audit, and as I predicted, it wasn't pretty. The feds are questioning the propriety and requesting repayment to ask for every legitimate penny, but nothing more. And the evidence is clear that we breached that principle. And by breaching that principle, a community here and elsewhere not only impacts the national checkbook, but they tarnish their community's reputation. And I want to remind you of the rhetoric that each of you council members suggested when the redevelopment agency money was yanked last year. Each of you expressed words complaining that Atascadero was being robbed of its local tax dollars by Sacramento. Do you see the irony, the hypocrisy here? I certainly do. The last thing I want to address is the press conference that was called last week in response to the OIG report. As I mentioned, it was appalling that the city manager was not seen behind the podium and the microphone. In his leadership tradition, Mr. McKinney sent out Rochelle, who I consider a good employee, to walk in that minefield alone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Ron Rothman. I live in Atascadero. And I just wanted to reinforce what the city mayor manager said, that the EIR for Walmart, the recirculated, is out for view by the public. It can be viewed here at City Hall or at the library. There's also on the city's website at the Community Development Department's page. And if anyone has any comments or questions that they want to enter, I just want to reinforce that the end of the month is the deadline to getting those comments in. With the little time I have, I'd like to discuss just one issue that should be concern to everyone, and that's the Del Rio interchange with 101. This is, I think, the main issue with traffic in the Walmart project. I'd like to compare the original draft EIR that was presented and this new recirculated EIR and show the what has changed in the document, at least partly now. The original EIR states that the applicant shall be responsible for constructing and funding the new interchange. The new EIR states the city shall enter an agreement with Walmart that the city shall be responsible for construction and funding the interchange roundabouts. Secondly, the original EIR, significant difference. Lastly, the original EIR stated that the Walmart project should not open until the roundabouts are in place. The new EIR doesn't say a date when they should be done, just that they should be done at some point when the city gets funding to put the roundabouts in place. If you read the EIR, you'll probably see, as I have, that it's a poorly written document. Its layout is poor, its internal flow, and the terms that it uses, that it interchanges, makes it difficult to follow the document. So if you're concerned about these issues that I've brought up, I can only give a little bit of that right now, but you can contact me. My name is Ron Rothman. My phone number is in the book, and I'll be happy to discuss it with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment from community forum? If not, I'll close the community forum. Next on the agenda is public hearings. There are no public hearings this evening. Next on the agenda is the management report regarding Oak Ridge Estates, 3F Meadows, PD 11 project update. And I believe David Athey is going to give the presentation on that this evening.
Member of the council, David Athey from Public Works, here to talk about Oak Ridge Estates and give you a project status update. Back in March of 2010, the city staff sent a letter to Castle Rock, the developer owner, stating that no further permits would be issued for the project because of a lack of progress on the intersection improvements at Los Altos and Highway 41. Also, we provided a council update, talked about the on-site road maintenance financial mechanism concerns that city staff had and Los Altos road curve widening requirements. Now, I'm here tonight to talk really about the State Route 41 Los Altos Road intersection. This is a picture on the screen of the intersection. Los Altos Road is up here in this area, and State Route 41. Castle Rock has been working with Caltrans since about 2005 to get these intersection improvements permitted through their process. In 2005, Caltrans and the app viewed that report and also got a peer review of that report by WTrans. WTrans's report confirmed the TPG recommendations that the right turn channelization is not required for this project. Therefore, staff, in order to get a final determination if this would be consistent with the PD 11 requirements, hired a engineer, Steve Sylvester from North Coast Engineering, to take a look at all the information, WTrans report, TPG report, Caltrans's letters, and give us a final determination. We used Steve Sylvester from North Coast Engineering because our current city engineer is conflicted out due to prior business arrangements with Castle Rock Development prior to his employment with the city. Now, Caltrans did send the city staff a letter today clarifying their position on the intersection improvements. Caltrans currently has not, their position is they have not commented on a refuge lane that is currently contained, that is talked about in our report. And we had said that Caltrans was okay with not installing a refuge lane. They have since clarified that their main concern is the right turn lane channelization onto Los Altos Road. Also, Caltrans made a slight clarification that their site distance requirement is 605 feet instead of 550 feet, which is what is currently in the PD 11 requirements. The city engineer has talked with Caltrans during his review, has visited the site, has looked at all the documents, looked at PD 11, and he has determined that right turn channelization is not warranted. However, right lane channelization is required for the project, and that would be consistent with the Caltrans standard 405.7 intersection design. He also said that the existing signage and site distance is inadequate for the intersection, and all other traffic safety measures should be implemented according to the PD, including signage and site distance. And finally, he says the use of the standard 405.7 public road approach intersection would be consistent with PD 11 conditions. And that standard approach intersection design schematic is shown. One of the issues that had come out of this is we had stopped issuing permits for single-family home construction up in Oak Ridge Estates. Currently, staff is recommending that resume once construction starts. So they have to get permits from Caltrans, get the project bonded by Caltrans, and then once they start construction, staff would release building permits again. However, that could be delayed till end of construction also, depending on what council would like. With that, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Councilman Clay.
Yeah, I was wondering, when they start construction, what do you anticipate time that it'll take to complete that project?
I would imagine 6 to 8 months.
6 to 8 months, I see.
Any other questions?
Yes.
Councilwoman.
David, some of the terminology is rather difficult for those in the audience, I imagine. Could you explain the difference between channelization and the right taper?
Certainly. So on the schematic shown on the screen, this would be a right turn taper. So it's a widened shoulder. There's no lane here, whereas you see there's a lane here for a car to drive in. This offers a widened shoulder, 12 feet wide, so cars can get off the side of the road and exit Highway 41. So that's the main difference.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I was wondering if you could explain what your position is, or if you have a feeling about the beginning or the end of construction and the issuance of building permits.
You know, I think city staff's position is once you get to the point of you have shovels in the ground on a Caltrans project, you've come pretty far. You've spent a lot of money, and you've also bonded with Caltrans, which is insurance that you'll complete the project. And they've also bonded with the city and agreed to do these improvements. So at some point, if they decided not to complete them, something happens, the city or Caltrans could step in and finish the project and have the money there to do that at that point.
So they actually step forward with a bond to Caltrans, or that would be to the city?
Both.
Thank you.
Yes.
And that bonding and everything would take place prior to any permits being issued for the next phase of home construction?
Correct. They're already bonded with the city, and before they can get the permit from Caltrans, they'll need to submit a bond to Caltrans.
Could you address the problem with the site distance? Is that
understood before is our PD requirements were for a shorter distance than Caltrans would now require, and I'm assuming that it would be required to meet the Caltrans standard?
That's correct.
And if much of that site distance is needed, the improvements would be implemented through vegetation management. I assume that is something that would be ongoing, or would it be in some way controlled that it would not become a problem in the future?
You know, after the applicant is finished with their project, it would become Caltrans's responsibility.
Okay, so they would maintain it to their standard after that?
Correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No questions? I guess we'll open this up to public comment. If anybody would like to comment, and it's a 3-minute period.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Joe Durvin. I moved to Atascadero not quite a year and a half ago from Los Angeles. My wife and I came up here to the Central Coast for what we believed were all the right reasons, living a simpler, calmer, quieter, and friendlier life. And we're pretty happy up here. I live on San Marcos Road, west of Los Altos. And for all practical purposes, Los Altos is really my only way in and out of my neighborhood. Yes, I could continue east on San Marcos Road and wind my way east and north and east and north and finally down to San Gabriel. But I think I've done that in, as I say, not quite a year and a half, three times. I travel not only up the hill from Atascadero to Los Altos, I also quite frequently go to Morro Bay for recreation, for meals, whatever. I don't know how many of you regularly travel over 41 to Morro Bay, but if you're driving the speed limit, you're not driving fast enough for an awful lot of the people who seem to be regular commuters over that route. The difficulties with the intersection at Los Altos are twofold. You've talked primarily here about driving up from Atascadero, and the issues with trying to make a right turn. And it's scary every time I do it. If there's a car behind me, I anchor on right away. The difficulty there is the length of the left turn lane to turn off of eastbound 41 onto Los Altos. That left turn lane is too short. It doesn't provide enough of a safety zone for me to get my car out of the way of the people who invariably are trying to go 55 miles an hour or often faster behind me. I don't feel safe going to and from my house if there's a car behind me because of I know that it's not the city's responsibility to worry about people who are breaking speed laws, but making both parts of that intersection safer would be safer for everyone who lives up there.
Fine, thank you for your comments. Next, please.
Good evening. My name is Deborah Paskin, and I live in Atascadero. And I am a neighbor of Mr. Durbin as well, and I concur with his comments regarding the safety of driving on Highway 41, trying to make a turn onto Los Altos, whether it's coming east or west. I attended Cuesta classes at Cuesta College, and coming home at night, heading west, heading towards from Morro Bay to Los Altos, making that turn at night was pretty scary. And the same going the other direction from Atascadero. You've got to pull over to the right as much as you can and turn as quickly as you can so you don't go into, so you can make the turn onto Los Altos. It is a challenge every time. The developer's proposed right lane upgrade at Highway 41 in Los Altos doesn't take into consideration the line of sight. Making a right turn under his proposal would still be dicey and very unsafe. We as neighbors collectively presented our case to the City Council back in 2005 to upgrade that right turn lane to a much safer conditions. In turn, the City Council voted down the developer's proposal. So why is it the current City Council, without discussion, vote, even a motion, or any explanation, changed that 2005 decision back to favor the developer? I have seen a pattern with the City Council in siding with the developer in place of the safety of the citizens, and I'd like to know why. Thank you.
Section is really in its essence is a Caltrans issue, not a city issue. The intent of the intersection improvements in PD 11 was to ensure that the intersection would meet Caltrans standards sufficient to support the new traffic from the project. The original request to put the right turn lane into PD 11 came from Caltrans. It was not a result of any environmental documents from the city or any city studies. It was a Caltrans engineer in 1994 that requested it. Highway 41 is a state highway and is under the jurisdiction of Caltrans, and so they're the ones really with the responsibility and the authority to determine what improvements are warranted at that intersection. Castle Rock purchased the property in 2005, working with Caltrans, submitting the plans and actually getting traffic studies that were performed by traffic engineers, looking at the plans. At that point, Caltrans determined that no, a right turn lane is not warranted. And they don't just make that decision in a vacuum. They actually use statistics and facts to back that up. One of those is what they call the level of service, which essentially is how long do you have to wait before you can get through an intersection. And they found that the existing level of service at that intersection is average or above average and will remain so throughout the build-out of the project. And so the level of service doesn't warrant a right turn lane. Also, the amount of traffic that goes in there, the traffic, the vehicle trips, also do not meet their standards. And they've got a big, thick highway manual that they use when they determine what improvements are needed at what roads and what intersections. And so the amount of vehicles, the vehicle trips, both going through Highway 41 and coming down Los Altos are below
the standards that they would typically use to require these improvements. And the speed as well, the average speed there that they that have been measured through traffic studies is 54 miles an hour. 85% of all traffic through there drives less than 59 miles an hour. Those are the facts. And obviously, again, according to their books, that does not warrant a separate right turn. People driving that speed in both directions, you're coming uphill, you tend to slow down anyway because of the hill. And I have a few things more, but I'll cut it off on there. Thank you.
Thank you.
5-0 vote. This was voted down in 2005. Is the vote of the city council irrelevant and they can just be bypassed? I want to also remind the city council that this, all of this stuff, all of the illegal roads that have been approved, and all of the dangers, all of the traffic numbers, all of this can go away if Castle Rock would agree to use the San Marcos Court and the Escobroso easement to build a road to 41 and bypass all these problems. They could do it and probably save themselves money. This report is, I'd like to also ask the city council and staff that immediately upon finishing or at least putting a shovel in the ground, building permits are going to be issued, even though the report itself says that there's still outstanding issues that Castle Rock hasn't met on the way of safety and maintenance on roads. Why would you allow them permits when there's still outstanding issues? Again, favoring the developer over the safety of the citizens of Atascadero. Okay? There's so many things. I don't know what to say. By the way, it says in the report there's an authorization for the city engineer to authorize these changes. I can't seem to find that passage. Maybe I missed it. All these numbers that are being bandied around, these were traffic numbers in 1994. That's what was used in the basis of the EIR. I think that the numbers were updated now. I think you'd find them quite different. If you want to sit in front of my house with me some afternoon and watch the UPS trucks barrel through our little local hillside, local road, and find out if you don't think that something bad's going to happen up there, I challenge that. The idea that I think it should be clarified then we talk about a 12-foot, that is at the end of the taper. And the line of sight at 605 feet is not adequate. And I challenge that mileage that Mr. Rickert gave. Because if you go up there and you there consistently, people are on your back of your tailgating your car while you're trying to turn right. It's very dangerous. The channel, the right turn channel is necessary. And this
go to Mr. McKinney, and some of these issues could get resolved. But the city has a history of sitting on its hands. And I think this is a classic case of that. I would agree that you're letting the developer off the hook to mitigate these very, very real safety issues. I've been through there before. I know what that's like. I was a police officer for over 30 years. That's dangerous. It's dangerous. And somebody's going to get hurt. And ultimately, it's going to be people in this room who are going to have to look in the mirror and wonder if they could have done something differently. But like I said, you need to fix it. And the way you fix it is the developer should step up to the plate. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other speakers? If not, I'll close public comment and bring it back to the city council. Are there any questions or comments? Councilwoman Fonzie, please.
Yes, I was wondering if perhaps Mr. Athey or anybody else up here could refresh my memory about the 2000 vote that was mentioned by Mr. Paskins. This is before my time. He said the vote was bypassed. I don't understand what this is referring to. 2005.
In 2005, Steve Kahn, the past Public Works Director, took this item to the City Council to change the PD language. to enact the same improvements that you see. Staff has subsequently looked at Section C1I, which allows the city engineering department, the improvements shall be constructed in accordance with the city engineering department's standard specs and drawings or as directed by the city engineer. So the city engineer at this point has determined that this intersection would comply with Caltrans requirements based on the current level of traffic at the site. And that's where we're proceeding at this point and not changing. We're not changing the language. We're just coming to an agreement with Caltrans and the developer on what actual development will take place at this intersection based on Caltrans's preferred intersection design.
So if I understand what you're saying, the figures have been updated to represent current conditions, not 1994 as was alleged?
That's correct. The EIR stated...
Is that correct? This is just considering one piece of the puzzle and more is coming to the council later?
Actually, Oak Ridge Estates has made, has taken steps forward. The Los Altos Road issue is curve widening on Los Altos Road, which they're required to do per the PD. They actually resubmitted plans yesterday for those improvements. What we're waiting for on this at this point is either easements from adjacent landowners to accommodate the curve widening or a redesign of the curves to meet the intent of the PD. I haven't looked at those plans yet, but either one of those two items will be satisfied. And they have actually also submitted easements for some of those curves to city staff.
And how about the maintenance issues?
The maintenance issues are currently moving forward. There's also actually, maintenance issues are actually addressed currently in their CCNRs. So their CCNRs outline requirements for the 111 lots. They each have a share of the road maintenance. This is on-site road maintenance for the project. So they do actually have a road maintenance mechanism at this point.
So is there a mechanism in place in terms of a homeowners association or other assessment district?
I do not believe they have a homeowners association.
Mr. Paskin, public comment's over with.
A homeowners association.
This is public comment over with.
I know,
please
but this is
your
not
seat.
The truth.
Please take your seat.
You can't make decisions on...
That's your last warning. Otherwise, the police chief will take you out and talk to you about the rules.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I missed something there. Could
their current CCNRs have a mechanism for on-site road maintenance for the project at this point and a cost sharing and a mechanism for cost sharing.
And how would that be paid? I'm confused.
Each owner is responsible for a 1/111th share of the costs that are incurred to maintain those roads.
And that would be paid when there is a problem?
Correct. So it's got a process they go through in order to get the roads to be fixed. And they have submitted to city staff also detailed estimates of how much it'll cost to maintain the roads, which items they're going to be working on, those kind of things.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but this would be fairly typical of a private road in Atascadero, which we have many that you own a frontage of the road.
For that, that's for the project itself, starting at the gate that you're
correct.
Talking about.
Correct.
You're not what the concern is from the gate on down Los Altos Road to the 41 Highway. Is that not right?
There is a concern, but we do have a written agreement that's signed with Castle Rock to maintain Los Altos Road, for any kind of construction damage. Also, the municipal code covers construction damage, off-site construction damage, and requires developers to fix that damage also. So there's two mechanisms at this point to make that happen.
But what Roberta was talking about is just basically inside the Castle Rock development. Is that not right?
That was my understanding.
Yeah. Okay. And the other thing is it wouldn't matter what the city recommended at the intersection of 41 and Los Altos Road if Caltrans has to prove it. They have the hammer. Is that not right?
That's correct.
So we could recommend anything in regards to the You know, I remember some of the conversations that you going up the hill, we wanted an area where they could pull off, and Caltrans was against that because of environmental reasons, because there's a little creek there or something. Is that not true?
That's one of their concerns, that a full right turn channelization would cause the creek to have, you'd have to move the, physically move the creek,
right,
the blue line stream there.
Yeah, I guess my point is we're catching a lot of flack for something that we don't have a whole lot of control over, and that kind of bothers me.
Thank you. Councilman O'Malley.
Thank you. I think Councilman Clay and Councilman Fonzie clarified many of the points I had concerns about, but we may be getting off of tonight's track. My understanding is there's three categories of things we've discussed tonight. The one that's on our agenda is the state highway changes that, as I understand, there was an EIR recommendation at a previous time that had traffic count at a higher number, and since then we have a more current traffic count that has changed Caltrans's recommendation, and they're the ones that have the final say on anything that happens on the state highway, and that's our primary decision. Actually, we're not making a decision tonight. You're letting us know that Caltrans has reached a determination on what's needed for access on the state highway. Is that my correct understanding?
That's correct. In 2005, their preferred alternative is what we saw tonight on
rules that if there's developer damage to the road separate from those first two categories, that's something that's enforceable. That's something we could act on if we've determined there's damage to the roads. And that's being pursued still. Is that still under discussion, or is that getting to some resolution?
You know, from staff's point of view, that's resolved.
Okay.
We've walked the roads with Castle Rock. We've also videotaped those roads, and we go up there periodically. Now, since they can't pull permits, there's really no construction damage taking place. But if they start constructing roads other than the homes, like on the backside, then we'll definitely watch that again, inspect those roads again.
So then the item that's not on our agenda tonight, but we can get an update on, is there are some project requirements that we've had some disagreement over the past, and that you feel that progress is being made in those areas at least.
Yes.
Okay, and it probably would be good to have an update at that at some future time. Thank you.
Councilman Sturvin.
Yes, David, just a quick question on the left turn from going eastbound and then the right turn going westbound. This standard, this safety standard they're talking about, is that left turn lane coming east? Is that within the standards for being safe or within Caltrans standards?
I don't know. But Castle Rock will need to go through that analysis with Caltrans. So in my discussion today with Steve Sennett from Caltrans, that was one of the topics he brought up, was, you know, Castle Rock's going to show us at the queuing length, the length of the left turn lane. I think I heard that comment. It's not long enough. They'll need to redesign that or leave it the same based on the traffic volumes that there are now. So it's based on traffic volumes on the road. So if it needs to be lengthened, Castle Rock will be required to lengthen that left turn pocket coming eastbound.
That's not known at this point. I mean, it's part of this plan. It's not knowing we're going to lengthen that lane. It's what's it being left to, because they have the current numbers for traffic. What other factors are going to be involved in that?
If you basically, that Castle Rock will submit their plans, and then Caltrans will check that and make sure and ensure it meets their current standards.
Now, is there any question on the right turn lane, or is it just the left when it comes to the way it sounds to me like the plan here for the right turn is the best plan, longer distance, line of sight, a little widening for the room. That sounds to me like the plan is already in place for the right turn.
Original traffic study indicated that 50% of the traffic out of Oak Ridge would use that Los Altos exit, and the study still said they didn't need the right turn lane. And then I believe the study performed by the city, they increased that to 75% of the traffic coming out of Oak Ridge would go down to Los Altos, and it also didn't require the right turn lane. So there has been a lot of study done on this, and I think, like Councilman Clay and some of the other members said, it's really a Caltrans call what is really required there, and we're kind of dictated by that. The state overpowers us as the city. So I think if you have any confusion, I would recommend that you read this page 44 and 45. Was that pretty much correct, Dave?
Yes.
Thank you. Is there any other comment?
Well, the other thing is you know, they maybe need to take their grievances to Caltrans, and, you know, that's seems what I would think. This idea of starting to issue permits once the, you know, plan for this is approved or they start construction, what's your feeling on that? I mean, there's not a lot going on construction-wise anyway, and how important is that to Castle Rock?
Yeah, I'd have to let Castle Rock answer the question on related to their finances and their planning. Staff is okay with when they break ground, letting those permits come up again, so they can generate income for their project and help if they need it pay for their improvements. Also, the project will be double bonded. There will be two sets of financial instruments for this project, so that it could be finished if needed.
I see. When you say double bonded, what do you mean by that?
Well, when you bond a project, you have to pay for, you have to pay to complete the project, mm-hmm. plus another amount. Plus, we have a second bond to cover any cost increases or any kind of materials you have to buy for the project. So typically, you have enough to complete the project that they have permitted.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Councilwoman Fonsi?
Just want to hear it from your mouth, David. If the city were to say we'd like to have channelization rather than a taper and we would like to have a longer left turn lane going east, Caltrans could do what they pleased anyway. That even if we gave that recommendation to have the highest safety possible, they could override the city council's decision.
That's correct. This is their facility and their right-of-way that they control.
It is just a receive and file, and if I could add one thing, because it seemed like there was some confusion, and I think we get sidetracked. I pulled up those minutes from 2005, and there was considerable discussion, just like exactly the same issues that you had tonight. And the motion was by Councilmember Luna and seconded by Mayor Scalise to contact Caltrans to determine if they can come up with a compromise alternative or reassure the city that this is a safe alternative. And it motion passed 4-1. Councilmember Clay opposed. So
what action should we take?
So you don't need to take an action. It's a receive and file, and the city engineer, acting city engineer, is filing the appropriate papers.
Fine, thank you. Next on the agenda is council announcements and reports. Do we have any announcement or reports? Do we have any committee reports? Restaurant review, please.
Just on the restaurants, we're fastly becoming the sushi capital of San Luis Obispo County. I mean, we got some great sushi places, so get out there, folks, and patronize these wonderful restaurants we have.
Well, my plug for the week is the new renovated Denny's. I went there a week ago Sunday for breakfast, and their new pancake menu is outstanding, and it's nice, clean, like a brand new place, and it's very, very nice. Any other committee reports? With that, we'll adjourn the meeting for this evening, and thank you all for coming.